Okay, this week in the Senate, we had several things we actually dealt with. Probably the most important one that we third read and finally passed was a bill that is sometimes referred to as Jessica's Law. Several of the other states have passed this bill. This bill makes several modifications in the laws regarding sexual offenders. I'm just going to try to touch on a few of the items. It's a very comprehensive bill. As a matter of fact, the summary on this bill is probably about 10 pages long, so you can imagine what the full bill might be. Some of the topics are, one is a toll-free sexual offender hotline. Right now, the Highway Patrol actually has a hotline that people can call into and check on sexual offenders. This actually makes a few changes in that. Another provision is that the Highway Patrol sexual offender internet website would have more information. Currently, their website has some of the basic information about the offender, maybe their name, possibly where they live, and this type of thing. Some of the things that would be added to that would be things such as any known alias that they might have, a date of birth, or even their alias's date of birth, last known residence, temporary work or school addresses, a physical description of the offender's vehicles, the nature and the date of the qualifying offenses, date of any release, parole, or probation, or how the person has done within compliance of their status with the registry requirements. Another provision would be mandatory reporting of sexual abuse. This is basically talking about any licensed healthcare professional who might deliver a baby or who even could perform an abortion. If they think that there's evidence that there has been statutory rape or any type of an incest, that they would be required then for anyone under the age of 18 for that to be reported so that they could follow up and see if that is actually there. Also, there was some changes made in lifetime supervision and electronic monitoring. When we talk about electronic monitoring, we're talking about possibly monitoring them with some kind of a GPS tracking device so that you would know where they were at all times. This actually adds to that list. There are some that is required to do that now. This would add more people that are offenders to that list. Also, another provision in the bill is that any offender that is out on parole, one of the conditions of their parole would be that their parole officer would have access to his or her home personal computer, and that would be one of the conditions on the probation. I think that's good. I think you can find out then if anything is actually going on. Another provision is no contact orders. And what we're talking about here is that if a victim of sexual offense initially makes a report, the law enforcement or the prosecuting attorney should try to inform the victim that he or she has the right to request a no-contact order be issued against the alleged perpetrator, and tell them how that the person can go ahead and how you could go ahead and get that order. Now, what they're doing is that whenever a judge would issue an arrest warrant, even if the victim hadn't requested a no-contact order, the judge would be required to issue an order at that time. So this is putting into effect that, as an example, if there was some incest or abuse from another person in the family, the victim might decide that they don't really need a no-contact order. But what this is putting into place, that it would actually be mandatory if a warrant was actually issued. There's some other information in there dealing with denying bail to some of the convicted persons. That would actually add some of the offenses that they could be denied bail for. There's also a provision in there that increases the minimum term of imprisonment for persistent sexual offenders from 30 years to life imprisonment without parole for probation. So in other words, where the maximum today is 30 years on certain crimes, this would change this up to life imprisonment. So that's getting a lot more harsher, which I think is good. There was also a provision in the bill dealing with sexual contact of a student. Currently, only a teacher who has sexual contact with a student while on school property is guilty of a crime of sexual contact with a student. This actually changes that to any teacher or student teacher, school employee, volunteer, volunteers of organizations that have been working with the school. It just about brings it down to any person that is having anything that dealings with the school could be charged with guilty of a crime of sexual contact if with a student, if that should occur. Some other provisions are that there would be an annual review by the court on certain people that have been civilly committed because of mental health. It would require that the court would actually review that person's status. Also, there's provision in there dealing with some conditional releases. What the changes are made here is that if even a probation or parole officer or a mental health coordinator believes that person that has been released should not be released any longer, they could immediately request that a peace officer would take that person into custody. Then they would go back into another hearing. And there's also with several changes made in that dealing with the victim's information rights, which would actually require that the Attorney General would inform victims of any type of a sexual offense or any filing of any petition made by the perpetrator. So in other words, if that offender or perpetrator is trying to make any type of a change, whether it's dealing with their parole or with their conviction, that the victim would be immediately notified of that. So I think we've got a very good bill. We have third read, passed it out of the Senate. It's on its way to the House. I would predict that this was a bill that we will easily get passed. I'm sure there will be more debate. It could be later in the year, and then yet it might actually go through pretty quick. But this is a bill we need to pass, and I'm looking forward to getting it passed and getting the governor to sign the bill. Also, a few other things we dealt with in the Senate Agriculture Committee this week, which I am a member. We heard a piece of information that I, or a piece of legislation that I had filed that is commonly called the SEED bill. It's dealing with seed technologies and biotechnology. The bill would actually prohibit certain local regulations regarding the sale, storage, or use of seeds. You ask, why do we need this? In California, over the last few years, there has been some jurisdictions in California that have actually passed legislation that prohibits the use of biotechnology in any of the crops that's grown in that area. I think most of the farmers know, and a lot of other people know, that almost 90% of our crops today have been genetically enhanced, whether we're talking about Roundup Ready soybeans or BT corn. So we're already using a lot of these genetically enhanced crops that have actually been very beneficial to the farmer as well as to the environment. And I just want to make sure that we don't have some, what I call the, and you've all heard me say this before, the wacko environmental groups that wants to bring about some of the things and the rhetoric, you know, about, as an example, the attack of the killer tomatoes. I think we all remember that movie. And they just think that terrible things are going to happen. And we just want to make sure that possibly some local governments don't believe some of the things that they've been selling or drink from the Kool-Aid from some of these environmental groups and pass some kind of legislation that would restrict the use of that. We also started debate on Senate Bill 816. I think most of you had heard me talk about this in the past. It's the statewide cable franchising bill. This would allow some of the telephone companies that want to offer some of the new modern technologies for delivering video to be able to do that. I recited on the floor when we were talking about this bill as a recent poll that found that 91% of Missourians think that they need competition in video and they would like to have a choice of who they choose for their video. I think that some of the existing cable monopolies want to keep a control on this. I think they're frightened of competition. And in some instances that maybe some of our city halls are a little bit too cozy with some of the cable companies. But I think as we move through, whether this bill or passed, we are getting some information out about some of the technologies that will be available. We also started to debating a bill that I think next week we'll probably debate at length. This is a bill dealing with election laws. The primary item in this bill is the use of a photo ID to be able to vote. I think this is good. I think when we look at some of the voter fraud that has went on in some of the last several elections, something we need to correct. I think this is one way to do it. There were instances recited about dogs voting, several dead people voting. There's one county in the state of Missouri that has about 150% more people registered than what there is even eligible to vote in the county. And I think when you've got things like this occurring, it allows for voter fraud to occur. I think by requiring photo IDs with certain exceptions, I agree that there probably should be some exceptions, that this bill would be a good bill to make sure that our voting is done right. So as you can see, we've had a very good week in the Missouri Senate. We'll come back next week, I'm sure, with some very heated debate on the election bill and others.